Ahead of a meeting with the IMF, Pakistan's prime minister visits China with hopes of securing new aid. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Pakistan has already secured $6 billion from Saudi Arabia to help stave off a widening balance of payments crisis. But it's looking for additional support to fill a $10 billion funding gap. So what is Imran Khan looking for today? Akbar Zaidi is a professor of economics at Karachi University in Pakistan.
Well, he's been looking for money from wherever it's available. We desperately need money. These are his words. He went to Saudi Arabia last week. He's been promised $6 billion. China has at the moment become Pakistan's main financial investment. They're giving a lot of money. They've promised about $60 billion over the next few years. The assessment so far is that Pakistan's government needs about $15 billion.
And if he secures this extra funding from China, he's got, like you said, more funding from Saudi and potentially more coming from the IMF. If all of that comes through, how does it move forward?
The problem with Pakistan's financial situation at the moment is basically a structural problem where the imports have increased rather tremendously over the last couple of years and exports have been stagnant. Furthermore, there's been devaluation of the Pakistani rupee and the oil price globally has also increased. Around all this, there's a balance of payments crisis. So that's a major problem.
Akbar Zaidi there. Let's do the numbers. A big rally in Asia today on optimism the U.S. and China will reach a deal to ease their trade dispute this month. Meanwhile, U.S. oil is on track for its biggest weekly loss since February on supply concerns. That's ahead of a new round of U.S. sanctions on Iranian oil sales, set to go into effect at midnight on Sunday. The Trump administration said it's prepared to drive the country's oil exports to zero, but there may be some caveats. So, how is Iran preparing? The BBC's Anu Anand reports.
Higher oil prices in recent months have earned Iran extra cash, but the total volume of Iranian oil sales have almost been cut in half since June and are expected to fall further after sanctions hit on Sunday. Sanam Vakil is an Iran expert at the Royal Institute of International Affairs in London.
The government has been stocking up on goods and medicines and basic foods. They're also going to maintain their subsidies. They provide cash handouts to over half of the population to buffer against the impact of rising prices, which continues to be the biggest challenge.
She says the depreciating rial has at least strengthened exports and that Iran is boosting bilateral ties with allies like the EU, Russia, China, and India. Still, in October, the International Monetary Fund cut its forecast of Iran's economy growing by 4% this year to a contraction next year of up to 3.6%. Sanam Vakil again.
The problem is, and this is where we're in this speculative moment, we just don't know who is going to officially buy, who is not going to buy, how Iran is going to try to smuggle their oil out. They're already turning off their tanker trackers. They're sending out oil by themselves because already the first round of sanctions prevents international shipping and insurance from protecting Iranian oil. So they're already using very creative means to keep themselves integrated into the energy economy.
Washington has been clear it hopes economic pressure will force Iran to retreat from regional conflicts in Syria and Iraq and force it to renegotiate the nuclear treaty which President Trump withdrew from in May. But reports suggest some of its top customers, India, China, and Turkey, are likely to keep buying oil, testing the Trump administration's resolve to enforce sanctions in the face of opposition from its own allies. In London, I'm the BBC's Anu Anand for Marketplace.
Now, staying with the commodities theme, October was a wild ride for stock market investors, but a great month for gold bugs. The precious metal scored its first monthly gain in 7. Alistair Hewitt of the World Gold Council explains what's driving demand.
Institutional investors suddenly started paying attention to some of the risks on the horizon, whether that's overvalued share prices, whether that's quantitative tightening by the Federal Reserve, the looming trade war between the US and China. And investors wanted to turn to an asset that can protect themselves and their portfolios against some of that risk.
Interestingly, gold buying by global central banks hit the highest level since 2015. Who are the biggest buyers? And why do central banks hold gold?
You're right. This is a really interesting part of the market. We've seen some central banks that have been buying for an extended period of time. time, Russia, Kazakhstan, Turkey. But what's really interesting within the past 3 to 6 months is we've seen some new central banks start adding to their reserves as well. So India, Poland and Hungary, these are more often strategic policy decisions. Now, the reason why central banks want to hold gold is a fantastic hedge against US dollar exposure. And a lot of central banks hold significant volumes of US dollars in the form of US treasuries. But it's also an asset that isn't necessarily part of the financial system. If I own gold, I'm not reliant on another counterparty to repay me.
We always tend to look at gold in terms of market participants and what they're doing, how they're trading it. But there's more to gold than just trading. Your data show gold jewelry demand and use in technology saw a bump in the third quarter.
Jewelry is actually the single biggest source of demand on an annual basis. We saw strong growth in India and China, and India and China account for around about 2/3 of global jewelry demand. Technology is fascinating. Gold is used in technology because it's highly conductive, it's highly malleable, which means you can get it into really small, thin pieces, and it doesn't corrode. Now, one of the drivers of demand for gold in technology has just been the world's ever-increasing appetite for memory and higher function in smartphones and gold in automobiles and all sorts of wonderful things like that.
That's Alistair Hewitt of the World Gold Council there. And don't forget, you can chat with us on social media throughout the day. You can find us at hashtag BBC Marketplace in London. I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.